Get ready to sit back, relax, and open your mind. Welcome to Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer. I am Chris Jordan, your host, live on the road here in Irving, Texas, right in the shadow of where I learned to think deeply. I would like to say my alma mater, but I never graduated college, so it's not technically my alma mater. But University of Dallas is right up the road, and right across from me right now is a very, very good friend from my University of Dallas days, Mr. Rusty Lozano from the Center Online Center for Biofeedback. Give them the website there, Rusty. Tell them where they can go to find everything.
It's www.onlinebiofeedback.com. And you know what, man? You are alma mater. I mean, it doesn't matter. You know,
hey,
degree or
they
not,
definitely contact me for money.
Yeah, but you know, you're in their system. But seriously, though, I mean, the way that we used to roll over at that school, being in the Rathskeller and and the people and the friends, dude, your legacy, part of it.
It was, I mean, it was family, most definitely.
It really was.
That was one of those things that whenever I went to college, and it provided a different college experience, truly. Not just that, but the core curriculum. In and of itself, provided a totally different college experience. The fact that no matter what your major was, you had to take 9 hours of or 12 hours of philosophy, 9 hours of theology.
No, it was a 15-hour minimum. I mean, there was no cutting it. So this school didn't.
Oh, wow. Then it changed between the time I came in and when you came in.
It must have, because you couldn't take anything less than 15 hours. You know, theology theology and philosophy was actually a requirement.
Yeah.
So if you were to go to a state school, you actually would end up having a double minor, a double major, because actually major in what you're studying and a minor in theology or philosophy.
Yeah.
Because the amount of hours that you take.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. And I mean, it was some pretty intensive study. I think, I want to say the only American book, at least at the time that I remember that we read, was Moby Dick.
Yeah. Call me Ishmael. We're at the entire series. I mean, there's Moby Dick, and then we moved on to the Dante's Inner Circle.
Yeah.
Paradise Lost. I mean, there was a lot of classics.
Yeah.
And there was an expectation that you understand the literature and know what it's actually talking about.
And
you know, some of that language is just very—it's extreme.
It's
dude.
Thick and it's hard. You know, I mean, I remember first semester was stuff like Iliad, Odyssey. You know, just straight up, and then just Edith Hamilton's mythology.
Do you remember that? So let's go to the Iliad. I mean, they made you read the version that wasn't edited for American English.
Yeah.
It was English, but it was translated directly from the language, so it was backwards.
So it was broken in parts.
It was subject, object. I mean, that was completely reversed. You'd find those at the very end of the sentence.
Yeah.
So you had no idea what you were reading until, like, the sentence was over.
Yeah.
It's almost like the way Yoda spoke.
Well, it was almost like Thomas Aquinas was required reading. And once you realized that there was a formula to reading Thomas Aquinas, that you technically read the middle, then the beginning, then the end.
Right.
You know, like that's how he wrote stuff. Then it made so much more sense. But if you just read it, it was like, what the
from beginning to end.
What did I just read?
It's almost like you needed to be navigated through.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what this place did. Let me tell you a little bit about like what I learned at UD.
Go for it.
I was never a divergent.
What brought you to UD?
My sister.
Okay.
My sister actually graduated from Irving, a high school in Irving, and then that was a local college. She could live at home, right? It wasn't like North Texas because we lived in Irving.
Yeah.
So they went to the closest college they could find, and Texas Wesleyan was one, but that was a law school in Dallas.
Yep.
And then the University of Dallas is just literally down the street, right across the street from the old Texas Stadium.
Yeah.
So
the big sand pit now.
That's a terrible loss, dude.
Oh, my God, dude.
They made it a bunch of nothing.
It literally looks like they just, like, put on a nuclear test where
it's almost like Stadium was. It's almost like the governor who was running that office said, well, I'm going to make sure you guys can't come back to this place after I'm gone.
So like they demolished it. Demolished it and salted the earth.
You're right.
You know?
But our brick tower bell was always across the street. I drive by and I see that and my heart.
Oh, man. Every time I was somewhere in the country watching a Cowboys game and they do a blimp shot, it was like, home.
There's home.
There's home.
Yeah. It was something else. But
to go out and listen to the radio of the Cowboys game on the hill and be able to hear the crowd cheering live through the hole in the roof.
Exactly.
On the hill, you know? Yeah.
But here's the thing. You know, when I first went to that school, I would hear those church bells, and I knew I was someplace different. I knew it felt like I was different. I was lucky enough that when I first went to that school, they had a double occupancy room in Teresa that was vacant, and they just put me in. So I had my own room.
Yeah.
So I was like, it was culture shock for me because where are my parents? Where do I eat? Who, you know, there's people playing outside. They already know each other.
Yeah.
So I kind of almost felt like I was back in grade school, dude.
Yeah.
You know, where you have to just reintegrate into a society. I mean, there are no parents.
It's not exactly like going to UT or University of Houston or HTC.
Not at all.
Or Austin Community College, where the chances of you running into somebody from your senior class are pretty good.
Are pretty good.
Because pretty good. You might know somebody that's like, going.
That's
no matter
the
where you go in Texas.
Right.
You know? But
this place,
people going to UD like,
no, but you're dealing with a different population of people. This is what I found out. This school, I don't know what it ranks in the U.S., but I recently heard that it's pretty up there.
It is.
I mean, they've been discovered, right?
I know. Whenever I started there in 93, fall of 93, I want to say the next hardest core curriculum was West Point.
Really?
As far as core curriculum went and the difficulty of core curriculum.
Let me tell you.
And the intensity of core curriculum.
I believe it, Chris.
Was West Point.
Because here I was. I grew up in a really poor household. And my mom and dad worked for you know, hourly wage. In fact, like my mom worked deep nights as a chef. And my dad worked at TI. And I went to work with him a few times. And, you know, he was actually just more of a tech. So they're always gone. But anyways, I wasn't raised in a household that had like a tremendous amount of education and language and you know, expectation. I mean, my dad, we were proud of him because he almost finished college.
Yeah.
Right. And my mom, you know, I think the highest, she had a few college courses in Peru, but it didn't count in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like the standard, right?
Yeah.
So here we are, and like we're in this household, and you know they're gone a lot, and
with the work ethic,
right? And so there wasn't a lot of supervision on like, okay, it's time to do your homework, and like make sure that you finish your tasks.
You were almost like I make no bones about it. I was a latchkey kid,
and the thing about it is like. Sorry, because I don't want to lose my train of thought.
No, it's all right.
Man, when I was like, I was a troublemaker when I was a kid.
Oh,
you know, I was really misunderstood.
I got into my fair share.
Right. I mean, kids usually do. Boys figure it out.
Yeah.
But here's what happens, though. I mean, you know, I'm there and I don't have the right kind of education. I don't have parents that can oversee and make sure I'm doing my work.
Quite honestly, it's that you didn't have the proper study habits.
I wasn't ever exposed to it.
Yeah. No, right. I wasn't either going to the public school that I was. And quite honestly,
so you know what, dude,
it was one of those like, do it because I only did like a third of my homework. The best they could ever give me was an 80, you know? So like I was a solid B, C student, you know? Had I done all my homework throughout all of high school, I'd have been an A, B student.
Right. Yeah. Sure. I mean, but see,
so
somebody. But
when
here's
I got
here's,
to UD, I had issues because I didn't have solid study habits.
Neither did I.
Because
I didn't
had
even
no
know
supervision. I came home.
I hear you, dude.
I played
it.
Sega. And
but guess what they did?
Do it.
They taught me because they spoke the language. It's like you're going to Mars or a different country in this world. Not Mars, because there's no aliens. Let's say you go and like you just get dropped in China. And you have to learn the language or survive.
Yeah.
So when I went to UD, it was like I had to learn the language of intelligence.
Yeah.
you know, to survive. And I was there and I was scared and I wanted the opportunity.
Yeah.
And so, but you know what that school did is what they're studying and like the level of expectation of you and the way they teach you to think, they escalated my broken study habits, my gaps in school. They escalated my education level to a magnitude that is it's beyond like
to where you're literally starving for information.
Because you know why? I never knew when it was too much. Yeah. I never had like, oh, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to do it my own way. I listened to them, dude. I did it how they said. So the expectation of things that I was learning like escalated my abilities beyond like like anything that I could either fathom. Like I couldn't fathom it. I can't even think. I would never be able to think if I was back in that time. If you would have asked me, hey, what are you going to do with your future? Where are you going to be in 20 years? I would have not told you I would be anywhere close to this.
Yeah, which we were just saying on the way up here to my hotel room. It's been 21 years since we've hung out and had a beer.
Right.
You know, like you've been on my show. I've been on your show on iHeartRadio. Sure. You know, stuff like that. But for us to sit down and have this kind of conversation face to face over a drink, sure, like we used to in the Ratskeller.
The Ratskeller,
you know, like it was a world unto itself. And like even I remember one time my friend Billy from the Scary Dad podcast came up for my 21st birthday. And he'd always seen a different side of me because I was and whenever he came up, he was like, dude, you are like a completely different person here. Like, this is not like what you were like at home at all. And I'm like, nope, I'm Waldo here. I'm not Chris. Like, my name ain't Chris. It's Waldo. That's what everybody knows me as. So, wow. Like, I'm a
you recreated it was literally, yourself.
Yeah, it was literally a totally different person than what I grew up.
Where'd you grow up at?
I grew up in the west side of Houston.
Okay.
And Texas, I was a
Texas
pretty
native.
Yeah, I was a pretty shy kid. You know, I had a very and even to this day have a very close, tight-knit circle of friends. You know, all of five or six people. You know, people like you, Julie, stuff like that, that I talk about deep things with, that I talk about business.
Well, that's what that so I going back to
that
this,
I trust with.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think that you have to have that trust and then mm-hmm. you have to have the confidence to take the information that they give you
and
adapt it with confidence in yourself so that you put your own spin on it.
Not just that, but I think it's the concept of discernment. I think it's the idea of it. That I think is a lot of what they
discerning they, what?
Well,
what
just,
they're teaching you to what you know?
Well, and discerning the world around you to begin with. And I remember talking to Dr. Norris at one point, you know, who taught theology.
Absolutely.
You know, he was a great guy. I loved him so much. He was my theology teacher in Rome. I literally came back. I used to use my report card from Rome as an example to the high school students that I taught for confirmation in senior year of don't do this. Like, I came back from Rome with, as far as I know, one of the lowest GPAs without being sent home. It was literally a blood alcohol content. It was a 0.08. Like, I got a GPA for existing. And at the time, he was, like, provost in Rome. You know, pretty young to be that, but he was. And they talked about sending me home. And he was like, but the ways he's growing as a person and to the realization of the world around him and everything is fully within the curriculum and what we're trying to teach. You know, he's just not doing the book work. Like, we can't rob him of this experience, of this chance to grow as a person, to realize things down the line. And that's why I think it's a concept of discernment. It's a concept of taking in the data of the world around you, the concepts of older teachings, and really learning to weigh things and, like you said, think in a totally different way.
Well, you know what it is. I learned in my doctoral program that I never really completed, but I learned that the whole idea of learning is actually coming from more of a constructivism. the concept is constructivism. Now, there are some theorists that even said in the early 50s, like, there was something wrong with the way that we're teaching this because we're so capable of so much more. That's how you have new ideas, Chris. If I say, hey, I invented like a clay cube and I give it to you and then you look at it and then you put your spin on it and the clay cube is now like an octagonal.
Yeah.
You know, we need that in the world. We need to be able to have outside thinking.
Yeah.
And that's what this place was doing. They use a concept of constructivism, which is they give you all this information.
Well,
and then they want you to, then they want you to be able to kind of like put your spin on it and say, well, what do you think? And they teach you, they force you to think with heavy.
Well, and heavy I was going to say, that's literally their motto was the Catholic School for Independent Thinkers.
Independent thinkers.
And that's what they taught us to do was it's not necessarily the full on, you know, Henry David Thoreau march to the beat of your own drum.
Yeah.
Razzmatazz, but it's the fact of you need to learn to think independently. You need to learn to think on your own and take the data and take the points of fact in front of you and see them for what they are. See the forest and the trees.
Let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
Did it work?
For me?
Yeah.
Yes.
It worked for me too.
So much, and I mean, like I said, what you said that family brought you to UD, your sister.
It was an accident, really. But then when I got there,
there's no accident to come in UD.
Maybe not.
You apply to UD.
I applied to UD, but it was an accident that I even stumbled upon that school because my sister accidentally stumbled on it. So I can't really claim, she graduated from there.
But it was a school that you were familiar with. Like, I would have never considered University of St. Thomas.
I would have never really considered a college, period.
Yeah.
I go to UD, and
quite honestly, had I never considered the seminary, I would have never considered college, period. And I would have never gone to UD. That's how I went there. It was the first test of obedience. Oh, great, fantastic. You've been accepted
to the seminary.
Here's where you're going to college.
So you had the seminary and the college. You quit the seminary, Chris?
I did, after my
what
first year.
What was that like?
It was, you know...
wow, why did you quit it?
Well, for many reasons, number one was I'm going to say something here, folks. I liked Reefer. No, I'm just playing. I did like Reefer, and that was one thing. But aside from that, it was the fact of after a year, I had realized that I had been called to listen and to serve, most definitely, just not in that capacity. That was the capacity that I knew. And I was willing to take that capacity. I was willing to give my life to that. Like, absolutely. I mean, I was a person of huge, deep faith and still am, but consider myself much more in the spiritual faith than the religious faith now at this point in my life.
That knowing that there is a deity, but it wouldn't judge you for, like, who you are.
Well,
the way that they're saying it is, wouldn't fit.
Like, it's looking for gross actions here. You know, it's not looking for me having 3-4 beers a night. It's not looking for me, you know, those things are piccatas.
Well, let me ask you something.
To me, but God doesn't worry about
that. But that's one thing, right? So you had a lifestyle, you had things that you had interest in.
Sure.
Okay, but then was there something else about the seminary that...
At the time, it was because of, and this is some big exposition here, folks. I don't honestly talk about this with a lot of people.
The
fact that I'm even talking about it on a microphone right now is pretty
amazing. But this isn't official at all.
Yeah, it is. It's going out. I don't edit, bro.
Well, no, I'm saying this isn't an official counseling session.
Oh, no,
I'm
absolutely
your friend.
Not. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. But, I mean, not even typical conversations in Dudes and Beer have brought this topic about.
There's no such
thing. And it was one of those, I felt called to serve, I felt called to my God. I felt the true presence of my God at the altar. And the examples of service that I knew through my years of service in the church were priests. And I'd considered it, and I'd been asked by numerous priests if I'd considered it. And I asked Father Ron Howard, or not Ron Howard, Father Howard Drobic, rather, what it would take to consider that. And he was like, "Are you serious?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm really thinking about it. Like, I'm not really looking at anything for college, you know, but this is something that I would really consider. You know, like I feel my God, I know my God personally, and I would like to explore this more."
That school didn't have what you were looking for. It did. UD? It did.
Oh, no, no.
It did, but you discovered something about that.
Well, the problem is, number one, I was 17. I turned 18 like a week after I was in the seminary, before right. college started.
Yeah.
Like, and it was one of those, there's a whole process. It's very boot campish. You know, if you really think about it, if you look at stuff, it's not necessarily like people in your face screaming at you, like yeah. you know, Arlie Ermey in in yeah. Full Metal Jacket.
Right.
But at the yeah. same time, it is a spiritual breakdown process. And one of the things that happened there was a lot of behind the scenes gossip and backbiting. And like one of the things that happened to me particularly, like I got in trouble for going to Rush and to Pink Floyd. And I was like, you can give me whatever punishment you want. Like, you know, week of nothing but going to school. I don't care. Like, that's probably the last time I will ever get to see Pink Floyd on a stage. So cool. You know, yeah. And they had issues with things like that, of course, because they're a little bit defiant, and you're not really supposed to be defiant.
So did you not finish because of them, or did you not finish for monetary reasons?
No, there's no monetary reasons. I mean, quite honestly, if you go through the 9 years of study from undergrad to getting a collar, if you get a collar,
9 years, dude.
It is.
That's
it's less time to be a doctor.
That's four.
It's less time
undergrad,
to be a doctor.
That's five, six, seven. That's your master's level. And then if you have four.
Diaconate after that.
That's pretty much a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a doctorate.
Yeah.
That's yeah. over 164 hours.
Yeah. Not many people realize that. Except it's much more than 164 hours. Because you're living it 24/7.
Yeah. But it's not to say that the Catholic Church is. What they're doing is bad.
No, and that's
and
just
what they're saying.
It took years of wisdom in my right. at the time 18-year-old head who isn't friggin' defiant at 18 years old. In my 18-year-old head, it was like, oh, who are you to allow this to go on in the background? That's not what it's supposed to be about. Years later, being a youth minister, working in the church, being involved, like. I was involved in the background as an altar server and on youth council at one point, but it wasn't until I served on parish council as a youth minister and served as a youth minister and taught youth and everything else that I came to realize the wisdom of what they did, where it was like, if you can't live across the hall from the person that's talking about you, or see them at daily mass in the morning, or see them at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and morning prayer, and evening prayer, what are you going to do when you're that person's superior and they're an employee at the church? Because guess what happens? Hmm. Everybody talks about the priest at the church. Everybody. So if you can't deal with that from your friend who lives across the hall from you, how are you going to deal with it when they're your subordinate? And it is literally a breakdown emotionally and spiritually, and a losing of ego and understanding the fact that, like, yeah, man, people are going to talk about you. Like, you can't take that. You can't let that, like, haze what you're supposed to be doing. You know, and it took me years to understand that wisdom in the process. And in the process of psychological screening that it takes to even be a seminary, it's intense. wild.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's very intense.
So they do a lot of assessment, psychological assessment?
Yeah, I remember about 3 days of assessment.
Wow. Involved. Like the psychological?
Yeah, before like I was even accepted.
Like a doctor would administer it?
Wow. Yeah.
They're at the school? Or?
No, no. It was at the diocese.
Well, you know what that means, man, is that it kind of, it's a testament to how strict they are.
Yeah.
I mean, even with undergrad students.
I had 30.
It's a testament, though.
I had 30 in my freshman class, which was large.
Expect you to follow up with what they're supposed to.
Out of the 30 in my freshman class, I know one with a collar.
Really? It's that hard, Chris?
That's the turnaround, bro. That's the turnaround. And not a lot of people realize.
There was two people in my class that actually dropped seminary while I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are numerous at UD. And
but they weed them out because they're trying. Maybe they're trying to find like somebody who epitomizes pure.
You typically weed yourself out.
Is that right?
Oh yeah. No, most people fully realize at some tier in the process that. I mean, I know people who went all the way to being diaconate. Like they were teaching learning masses at the parish where I was like assistant youth minister. Wow. And it was like, hey, what's up, bro? I'm gonna go out and have a margarita when we're done, you know. Yeah. And then they left, they're married, they're a professor now, and they got like 4 kids.
Wow. Yeah. That's
and they left like a year before they got a collar. Like the collar. They had a collar. It was a diaconate collar, but yeah.
It kind of reminds me of Sister Act. When Whoopi Goldberg was, you know, she kind of sneaked into the nunnery.
Yeah.
And then whenever some people quit, I think there was like the head mother. I don't know what she's called. But,
yeah.
She
mother
goes,
superior.
Damn, we lost another one.
Yeah.
You know, and it was that common, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it happened all the time.
It's strict because there are tight, high expectations.
Yeah.
That's what I never had in my household.
Exactly.
When I went to the school, all of a sudden, like, my expectation there was nowhere near what they were expecting. I was in shock. And so when I went in and I started taking these courses, I'm like, you know, I have to be responsible for what? But you know what it was, dude? I mean, I wasn't necessarily that test smart because I had test anxiety.
Sure.
But I retained everything that I heard.
Yep.
I retained everything that I read. And even though I had test anxiety that wouldn't let me, like, you know, perform the way I need to. You know, I was still absorbing everything because I'm an example. I'm a statistic, honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a statistic because I got to the very, very top of my education, but I'm a high school dropout. I had learning differences. I was put in special ed from third grade all the way to my 12th grade year. Because really, I don't know. I mean, I think I was pretty terrible, dude. I was really terrible. It couldn't handle me. But what also happened is that they, I don't want to cut you off.
It's okay.
But, you know, because I'll lose my train of thought. But the expectation there is also, it's just really high, dude. You know,
yeah.
I forgot what I was saying.
That's all right. You were talking about early childhood development and school and things like that.
Right. So when I got there, like a lot of these places, I mean, they didn't know how to handle a kid like me because I was really active and hyper,
yeah,
grabbing things and running in. And I mean, I see a lot of kids like that. And, you know, what I learned is I was misunderstood.
Yeah.
So when I went to the school, like, you know, they talked me through what I needed to do in order to be successful in their class. They'd coach me.
Yep.
And I grew into their shoes. I didn't know when to stop.
Yeah.
That's what that school does to you, dude.
Well,
it's one of the best
and
best universities.
It gets you to the point of understanding that when you do grasp something, hold on to it and grasp onto it and keep going. You know? Because yeah, it was one of those that, the stuff that I learned there, the stuff that I read there is what I lean on to this day. It's what thinking deeply is all about, the philosophical lessons.
I remember going to a party, right?
Yeah.
And like a drink party at someone's apartment or their, you know, wherever.
What?
That doesn't happen. Old Mill? Never, yeah. Right?
I'm pretty sure I invited you under the pretense of come have an old school UD drink in a hotel room night with a microphone.
Two-man party. So, but here's what happened.
There's a one-man party before you got here.
You walk in. I'm glad we're doing this, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a conversation like this in a long time. We walk into the party, and you're expecting to see a bunch of drunk, floppy, you know, college kids.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, barfing and, like, being obnoxious.
Yeah.
But there wasn't anything like that, man. You'd go there, and there are these dudes, like, sitting around in circles, and they're talking about stuff.
Yeah.
Like the allegory of the ring.
Yeah.
You know, and it would actually – and I'm like, you know, they're drinking. You could tell, like, some of them have had a few drinks, and they were still able to keep their intellect on the conversation.
Yeah.
That would blew me away, man. I was like, what is this? What is this place?
Talking Rene Descartes and Kierkegaard and, you know, just crazy concepts. You know, talking art in corners, other people talking about classic Greek drama. You know, it was literally a hodgepodge of different personalities that shared a commonality.
Mm.
And
you know what? And it goes on with this concept that we all heard the same material and in the lecture, but your spin on it is different than mine.
Yeah.
Now, let me explain to you how mine is so different than yours. And then that's what we talk about all night.
Yeah.
That's the level of intellect.
And critique each other's interpretation.
You know why that happened, dude? Because they boosted self-esteem. They boosted confidence.
Well,
they boosted your thought process and confidence to take a stab.
Quite honestly, Rusty. This is, and I want to know what you think, Rusty, on this topic right here, because this is exactly, number one, we were taught through reading the Federalist Papers and shit like that. That is exactly what the foundation of America was. It was people meeting in the public house and having ale at the Green Dragon in Boston and talking about politics, economics, religion, stuff like that, and the suppression of such things that led to the American Revolution. And that's quite honestly like the foundation of Dudes and Beer is why is it that we cannot sit back? I love Julie Connolly to death, and I'm so, so, so glad that Julie Connolly reconnected the two of us. Julie Connolly and
Julie,
I intrinsically on a few levels butt heads on some things. But we're willing to sit back, butt heads, talk about it, have a beer, and still say hi tomorrow.
Still, like, you know, laugh about your disagreement. Laugh about your disagreement and, like, not take it personal, but keep it on the intellect side.
Exactly.
The intellectual is what we need to train.
Be open to at least listening to somebody else's point of view.
Right. The intellectual is what we need to train so that we can manage the emotional. The less training you have in your intellect, the more like, you know, mammal like you're going to be as a species, and because you're not refined. You know, there are dogs, some dogs that know how to sit, there are some dogs that know how to catch a frisbee.
And
what is the difference between the two?
It's interesting that you say that because of course coming from UD, you know, you took the psychology courses, things like that, and that even thinking distinctly in brain between the reptilian brain and the monkey brain, the thinking brain and the instinctual brain, you know, like the amygdala, things like that. You know, there are some people that literally react from that part of their brain. That's just the only way they know how to react. They haven't been.
That's it. That's just the only way they know how to react. Because if you were to take an infant and remove it from any sort of human interaction care, then wherever their level of skill set is, it's where it's set.
You know?
And so you look at the movie Tarzan. They brought him back, and like, you know, he's a monkey man, right?
Yeah.
And then they refined him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think that the whole idea of of what we're capable of, it all depends on the level of education, the level of exposure to information that you're given at a younger age.
Yeah.
So that you can refine those skills.
Yeah.
And you can refine your ability to...
And I truly believe...
Be more intellectual.
Well, not just that, but as someone who spent time working with children, not just junior high and high school, but teaching 4-, 5-, and 6-year-olds, even teaching adults ages 4 to 40, I taught for many years. It's the fact of what you're exposed to, how you're taught, and from a young childhood. And that's one of the reasons why, like, I give Dalbus as much independent time as I can. I want him to explore things in his own way. And sure, I'll teach him ABCs, everything else. But to me, life is experiential. He needs to learn to express things in his own way.
And but I think, you know what you want to also do is go like... Ahead. Is pay attention to the behavior, and when mm-hmm. you see that they need nurturing, like they fall down and pretend like they hurt themselves,
yeah.
you can nurture that and
go
through the motions, even if they're not really hurt.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. because there's still a lot of emotional development there.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Amy actually was just talking about that today, that Dalbus fell off the couch today. And I was like, how'd he do?
Oh, no, is he okay?
How'd he do? You know, and she was like, he was okay. He just kind of looked around like, whoa. And she's like, I picked him up and held him. Good. It was like, you know, so that's what it's like to fall off the couch.
And that's what it's like to
and
associate.
Cared for him for a minute.
Hurt associates know. To but, like being comforted.
But it also wasn't an immediate hurt associates to pain. You
right.
know, it wasn't an immediate like.
That's interesting, Chris.
Because yeah. like, hey,
guys, like they could have, but like, what am I feeling right here on my head?
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
Wait, are my parents gonna? Oh my God, my parents are concerned.
Yeah.
And then they start crying.
But I mean, you think about it. Like a couch is a decent like for a 7 month old to roll off a couch. That's a.
Yeah.
That's a decent little height.
Right. Oh yeah, for sure.
It's a height that's own height. You know, granted, it's six inches under his height. He's a yeah. big boy. So it wasn't one of those, like, you know,
you
fell
bruises?
From a height greater than your own, yeah. so you might have sustained spinal injury. Don't move him.
No.
You know,
I mean, it happens.
It wasn't that.
It happens.
Oh, yeah. You know, hey, babies bounce. That's,
oh,
what all the
fat,
that's what all the fat's for.
And you don't want to, like, keep them tied up. I mean,
no.
let them roll.
And that's just it. It's the fact of life is experiential. And that's what I think UD taught us. I think that's what the Rome program was about. Was not only the fact that you read these stories from these places, but now you're going to go see these places. And you're going to see where these stories came from. And it gave us a different realm of understanding of where our place was. Like, I remember coming back to America and going, oh, wow, I could really kind of see why a lot of people really don't kind of like us. Like, we have not been around that long to be as hey, hey, hi, ho as we are.
You remember, hey, did you guys leave from Bari to go to Greece?
Oh, I can't even remember.
You took the barge, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they point out Ithaca?
Yes.
What did that do to you, man?
That blew my mind.
It blew my mind. I was
it
like.
Blew my mind.
I sat and I stared at Ithaca and I looked at the sand and I looked at where the water met. And I was thinking about the stories, like, you know, Achilles and where, what must have happened there and how everything kind of played out.
Yeah.
And so when I saw it, it brought everything to life.
Yeah,
I mean,
and that's just it. It tied things
so
together.
Experiential learning,
you know.
Is
whenever
huge.
Whenever you went to Delphi, and sat and had like philosophy class, you know, at the Oracle of Delphi, stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, it was just like, what? Wait a minute.
Wow.
We just had history class in the Temple of Zeus. Yo, like that's just crazy. Like we just had mass in the catacombs. You know, that kind
that
of
was.
Stuff. It was, you know.
And then we would get on a bus and like, where are we going? And then it's like Monte Cassini.
Yo, Monte Cassino, man. Monte Cassino. I came to a point of mortality in Monte Cassino, bro.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah, sincerely. Because I remember we went up to the monastery. I still had my rosary. It's the only rosary I pray on. It's this beautiful hematite rosary with a medal of Saint Benedict in it, because it's a Benedictine
monk. Saint Benedict is my guy.
And this Benedictine monk went through like a 15-minute long prayer.
So is Assisi. Over
it. It was so beautiful. But dang, we were there. We were having history class in the courtyard, and literally like clouds started coming through history class, because we were on top of the mountain there at the monastery, so wild, you know, man. And then we went in and we saw where the bomb dropped and the altar.
Oh,
but
wow.
when we went down to the graveyard,
yeah,
and we're walking around, and somewhere I have a picture of it, and I wrote a poem about it, but there was a guy in the graveyard that was born on my birthday, August 28th, and had died at my exact age that I was when I was looking at
that's
the tombstone.
That's how I got my name.
And it was like, whoa, like this dude is like as old as I am standing here looking at his grave, and
yeah,
I was born on his birthday. Like,
you were born on his death date or his birthday?
His birthday, August 28th.
I was born on my grandma, who is like a really nice lady, our next door neighbor.
Yeah.
Her son was Stephen Russell. And I was born January 14th on the day of his death.
Wow.
No, his birthday. I'm sorry. Our birthday. Yeah. The same. And that's, isn't that wild, dude? Because you think about that, and that's how I was
born on my mother's 25th birthday.
Wow.
So it explains a lot of our headbutting, if you think about it astrologically. Mm-hmm. The whole male, female, 25 years apart, both Virgos, sure, both redheads. Like,
what happened to Monica Cassino?
Monica Cassino.
It's not Monica Cassini?
Monica Cassino, pretty sure.
Okay.
But yeah, it was carpet bombed.
And there were World War II soldiers on the hill. They were Polish.
Well, what happened was, while they were in the middle of mass, the reason why we went to the monastery was because in the middle of mass, the carpet bombing started happening.
It's World War II. It's Germans.
Yeah.
Germans or Americans? That's Italy. I don't even know, bro. I just confused myself.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was German bombing at the time. But anyway, the church sustained a bomb in the middle of mass that hit the altar and did not explode. And if you remember, under the altar encased in glass was the diffused bomb from World War II.
Chris, man, what does that mean, dude?
Yeah, like it was moving moments, you know, things like that where it's like, wow, we got to experience some pretty cool stuff. And it is an experiential life. It is something.
What are you thinking when you hear that? The bomb didn't go off. God?
Well, and, you know, I just recently recorded an episode talking about that with somebody. The concept of faith itself and the idea that, you know, faith is an individual thing. Like, even though I was brought up Roman Catholic, my spirituality and my faith now is totally, like, totally different than it was when I entered the seminary. Even when I left UD, even when I was assistant youth minister, like, my understanding of my connection with my God and the world around me and the universe is totally different.
That's what you got.
You know? And it's a culmination of learning.
That's
it's a culmination
you took from
of
your
experience.
Seminary, dude, is
yeah.
You needed to hear what you needed to hear. You got what you needed.
And it took me a long time. A lot of people, when they leave, are bitter for a while, you know, because it's like you had the call and you feel like you either ignored the call or you weren't fully called and you feel shorted. There are a lot of emotions that go on with it. It's a lot of heavily charged emotion. You know, it's odd because you feel this sense of responsibility and you feel this sense of a burden of knowledge almost. And what do you do with that? How do you deal with that? You know, it took me a while, even as assistant youth minister, going to mass where I would not think judgmentally about people, you know?
Did you have a problem with that?
For a little while, yeah.
Like you're racist?
You grew up in a household. It was spiritualist.
Spiritual racism?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you weren't like us.
It was more like, hey, wait a minute, man. Like, I know you. And I know you go to mass every day.
Right.
But I also know you.
Yeah.
And like, no, you know, you ain't doing what you're supposed to be doing. You aren't, you know. And it took a long time to break that almost Machiavellian concept of the cattle being led by, like, these people are cattle. They don't understand what the call is. You know, they don't understand that connection. And at the same time, how haughty, how utterly, egotistical to think. You know, looking back on things with a mature head. Everybody's spirituality is different. Everybody's experience is different. Everybody's life is different. You know, good God, if we were boiled down to like 1 year of our life, imagine if your life was like a fucking roulette wheel. And at the end of it all, they spun it. And whichever one it landed on, that's the one you're judged by, buddy.
Wow.
Like, that's just a wild concept to think about.
So wait, did you get that kind of pressure at home, and then you got that kind of pressure at the seminary?
What's interesting is I had different pressures at home. My father, being somebody who was not extraordinarily a spiritual person and everything, or even religious, was...
How did you become so spiritual?
It was through the connection with my mother. My mom was the one that took us to church every Sunday. And I just happened to lock into really good connections with really good priests. My brother decided to serve at the altar.
Why was your mother so religious? So into the Catholic faith, enough out priests for you guys.
Well, it was the fact of she was divorced and trying to refine some stuff, and she started going back to church. Of course, it was the early 80s, so a lot of people were still of that Vatican I mindset of, wait a minute, I've had a divorce, I can't receive Eucharist. And the priest was like, hey, man, no. No, you can totally still receive Eucharist. Let's talk about this. So that opened her up to the church and got her to going and everything else. And as things grew, my brother started serving. Then, of course,
is he a priest?
No. He does own a retreat company.
Why did she get you guys so involved in the church?
It was kind of one of those like, hey, you know, time, treasure, talent for tithing. We didn't have a lot of treasure, but we had some time. We had some talent.
Yeah.
You know, so it was one of those, like, this is one of the ways that we give back. My grandfather, Dalbus, the namesake of my son, when I found out he was an altar server, that just sealed the deal. It was like, well, I need to be an altar server. I idolized my grandfather, and it got to where I loved altar serving, and I absolutely enjoyed it. And I got into understanding the Mass and the history of the Mass and the parts of it. And it was something that I enjoyed. It was some of the only history that I enjoyed. So, yeah, I took Mass very personally as I hit high school, as I was training altar servers and things like that. So, when I entered the seminary, like I said, I didn't really consider a lot of choices for college. You know, I wasn't like shopping colleges as a senior in high school.
Yeah.
But I'd considered the seminary. And it was something that I was like, you know.
Do you have regrets for not finishing?
No, not now.
No.
Not now.
You did?
I had a lot of issues, yeah.
Like after you quit, you mean?
Yeah. I had a lot of inner turmoil, and a lot of seminarians do. A lot of people that leave do.
So you quit UD, and then you went back home, and then like here comes all like your mom. Maybe you feel like you failed her somehow.
Well, it was definitely a feeling of failing my family. Yes.
Were you the superstar? Yes. Were you the one that was going to make the name for the family?
I didn't really feel that, but it was one of those, like, being an altar server as long as I was, being as involved as I was, being, you know.
I thought you were going to be a man of God.
They figured that was just going to be the route.
Who's your family, though, at this point? Your mom?
My mom, my grandmother, people like that. My grandmother reassured me.
Yeah.
My mom, every once in a while, would bring things up, and I would have
she
to be.
Her hopes up.
Well, she would bring things up about issues that happened, and I'd be like, "I love you very much, but you were not there, and you have no idea. You will never have any idea." That's like somebody telling you that has never been to boot camp. I've never been to boot camp. I can't tell you what the hell.
Yes,
Marine. In a way, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, it is a tearing down process where you come out a different person. That's the idea, is that you were torn down from what you were and rebuilt.
That's what they did to me.
As someone else.
That's what they did.
And that's absolutely what boot camp for the Army, the Marines, is meant to do. It's meant to change you into a more responsible, more disciplined person. And what it left me with was a concept of my actual power and influence. The fact that when I throw a rock, a ripple happens. That's what I mean by that. Is that I mean something. I am significant somehow. The actions that I make reverberate with other people. They impact other people.
But then what does that do for you as a person? It suppresses.
For me, it wreaked havoc for a long time.
You can't develop like who you are because now you're trying to become something your family wanted.
You're trying to fulfill something that other people are expecting from you. And it took me years. And believe me, that led me to addiction, all kinds of stuff down the road. Because I felt this sense of failure, because I felt this sense of shorting other people that I loved, when in all actuality, none of that has any bearing on them whatsoever.
Yeah.
None. Not what my brain told me, what's at all, you know? But it took years to realize that. It took a long time for me to come to a point of peace, for leaving, and to a point of understanding that I was called for a reason and I was called to leave for a reason.
And it needed you somewhere else.
And that I was supposed to be there to experience that. Nothing else. And what a blessing to experience, you know, that I had the opportunity, that I made the friends that I made, that I had that unique point of view on reality in the world around me that not a lot of people do. Not just the UD point of view, but the concept of the seminary point of view and how I spiritually am a cog within the world around me. You know,
yeah.
And
you needed it. You needed that component.
Yeah, and the teachings from UD definitely, like even after I left the seminary, I continued at UD. I came back to UD.
You did,
because I was called back. I couldn't not want that information. I'd been exposed to this beautiful font of sweet water of information knowledge.
It's not even that. What the school does is it transforms your thinking, your intellect, skill level, and your ability to retain and apply.
Yeah.
And then that's just the information they are practicing with you on.
Yeah.
Can you handle this? Can you handle, this is what we expect. This is considered normal.
Yeah.
Can you handle it? That's where the, that's where that whole process comes from. And those kids are, kids that go to school, I mean, they're essentially trying to use techniques to help them feel more calm and techniques to yeah. really, you know, adjust and become like the person that they are.
Well, well, and it's it, it's the fact of, it's an actual education as opposed to going somewhere like UT or A&M where you're going to be in an English class with 120 people. You're in an English class with 35 people. That teacher knows your name.
They know when you're there and when you're not.
They and it's the fact of through conversation, through teaching ethic and things like that, they really do learn what each student is about and what they can expect from each student, you know, and you're graded as an individual, not as a class of regurgitative muscles. You know,
so if you're graded as an individual, then how important were those grades?
Hugely, hugely, because you're being graded on as an individual.
Like, so it's not like subjective, it's more objective.
Yeah.
So it's not like the teacher can see you develop into a new person.
I consider it better and much more constructive because it's, yeah, how much have you developed as a person? From the beginning of the class to the end of class.
And the teacher would know just by seeing your demeanor and not necessarily...
And your comprehension level.
Absolutely. And everything your application, else. Applicability. Which
exactly.
Is, how can you take it? Now explain it to
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
Explain it to me like you're talking to a four-year-old. That kind of yeah. deal. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I know for a fact that I had teachers that graded me upon that.
Really? UD. Who?
I know for a fact.
Well, just tell me in classes.
You know, Dr. Norris was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, where he understood that I saw things on a different level, but, you know, could explain these concepts, but not necessarily the way that I should have to explain them.
Yeah. But explain it to me in the way.
But I could still explain it.
Yeah.
You know.
Kudos to that school, bro.
Yeah.
It was the best thing that ever happened.
Well, and
to
it's really an adapted system of learning. It's learning to adapt education to the student.
By creating and helping them develop into their own individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's something that I think I think Montessori kind of ties into that a little bit, somewhat. The Montessori model, you know, the idea of
hands
sure,
on.
Hey, sure, we're all going to learn this year how to recognize colors, ABCs, stack like objects, organize things, and recognize some basic shapes. But you're going to understand that on a different level than him.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you don't both pass. And that doesn't mean that you don't both, like, you're both graded on what you're able to do in accordance to that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Man, something special, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely was. And it was a special world, and it bred special relationships and made us realize that these things were special. I mean, good God, here we are 21 years later.
Yeah, we're joking.
You know, joking around and having some drinks and
but I remember every single one of those faces because I've had conversations with them. You know, we've not like, hey, you know, what's
well,
going on?
And,
but it's like, hey, what you know, what are your thoughts on the third tier of Dante's
circle, yeah, yeah. You know? Well, and what's funny is that I met my wife at UD.
Amy. She's nice.
You know, we reconnected via Facebook years later, but at the time that you were at UD, she was dating my buddy at UD, you know, all that kind of stuff. And even to this day, most of my close, close circle of friends come from University of Dallas. They come from those years. So many people form that bond in early college in those years where we're learning to become our own individual, where we're learning to make our mark on the world. But it's our understanding of the world around us that takes us into the future. And I think that's the unique part that we got, was being able to understand not just our impact on the world around us, but the concept of history of the world around us and where we have been and where we may be able to go with the concepts of philosophy, social philosophy, things like that.
That's thinking independent. What are those three terms on the actual degree? Verita, diligenta, diligenti. And then there's one more.
Diligentis veritas?
Yes. Yeah, truth, diligence, and there was a third one anyways. Yeah. But it's that whole concept of independent thinking.
Yeah. I don't have a degree at all.
Shush your head, man.
No, I'm serious.
You've been exposed to all that, dude. I mean, you know
it. Oh, no, I have. And don't get me wrong. Like, because of UD, I've tried to explain to people for years my library, because there's a lot of technical manuals.
Did you ever go back and like actually buy your old college books?
No, I never resold most of them.
You never sold them? Oh, far out, dude. I did. You know, I wish I would not have.
Yeah, most of my books.
I kept the Divine Comedy.
Most of my books. The books I resold were like biology. Astronomy.
I just want to go
all
walk
my,
around.
All my philosophy books,
yeah.
I kept. Every one of them.
Nice.
Every one of them. All my psychology books, I kept. Every one of them.
Oh, I'm such a dummy, dude.
Yeah.
And they were just given like 30 cents, dollar. I mean, you're yeah, like, yeah, you got $4.
It was like,
I made $4 seem like you were rich, woo-hoo! Dude.
I got a pint.
Because most of these are 30 and 70 cents.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's that kind of deal is really important. I love the way that they did that. I mean, honestly, that school is just...
Yeah, it was a unique form of education and a unique concept on education.
Have you heard, like, you read some of the articles? America's Best Kept Secret?
No, yeah. I've never seen those.
And, man, if you just look up UD, like, people are starting to discover the school.
Yeah.
And then they're flocking. It's going to get to a point where, like, they have so many to choose from. They're going to
Got to a point at one point where the Master's of Business program was as large as the undergraduate.
Really? Yeah, just they've about. Always had an amazing business.
Yeah,
you know, business program.
That yeah, that's upper, been recognized for years and years and years.
Really?
Yeah, their MBA program has been known for many, many years. But.
And that's why, if you think about it, that's why they're flocking with international students.
Yeah. No, that's where most of the international students came from, was the School of Business.
It's amazing, isn't it?
So, on that note, Rusty, like, what do you see yourself doing? Like, I'm one of those people that really kind of puts myself out there and tries to manifest as many things as possible. What are your general hopes for yourself for the new year? What have you been considering working on personally?
Well, I've actually written some documents there. They're in manuscript format for books.
Okay. Oh,
there's three of them that I've actually put together and they're nice. I've been working on them for a while, but most of it I just kind of, you know, came up because it was just on the tip of my tongue. And what I'd like to do is actually finish those and publish them.
Okay.
And so my hope is that I can publish at least two of the manuscripts that I've written last year and then, you know, be able to kind of, you know, develop and research the techniques that I've developed. And see how
yeah,
because
you've got some amazing stuff with the Online Center for Biofeedback. The technology that you use as far as therapy, you're looking at some forward-looking technology for individual sessions, things like that, that we were talking about before the show. And it's absolutely the work that you do to begin with. I think is so entirely important. People don't realize how impactful their daily regular environment is to them and how they can change the way that they think and behave by changing their reactions to that environment. And by simply recognizing the fact...
By controlling their physical manifestations, yeah, their physical reactions.
Yep.
Physical invokes emotion.
Yeah.
And so by learning to control your physical, you can maintain and more on the intellectual.
Yeah.
Which is where you can postulate things and, you know, apply your skill sets.
Well, tell everybody where they can go to check out sessions at the Center for Biofeedback, where they can go to hear your episodes with Therapy Hour with Rusty Luzzano. Give us the whole spiel, Rusty.
You can go to onlinebiofeedback.com and go to the resources tab or homepage, and it opens up tabs to everything that we have and everything we're up to, including the radio show link. So,
fantastic. There you have it. And on that note, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Rusty, thank you so much.
Thanks, Chris,
for coming out.
Catching up. 21 years.
I'm thinking deeply. It was 21 years.
I haven't done this in a long time.
We've been thinking deeply tonight. And I, dude, like I said, I went through
stuff. It takes somebody who went to the school to understand how to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Like I said, you got some stuff out of me tonight that I can literally count maybe 4 out of 5 fingers on my hand, people that know the things. Well, now there will be tens and hundreds of thousands that know. I can never run for office now, but didn't intend to. But
it's just the person you are.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, it's who you are. It's what
it's
made
the
you
amalgam
up.
Of what I've become.
Everybody has a story.
Exactly.
And everybody does.
Yeah.
So for somebody to think that they've lived something, that made mistakes, and if fail people, you know, it's that doesn't define you. What you have to do is eventually, essentially pick yourself up, like my dad used to say, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and keep going.
Exactly. And on that note, everybody, once again, thank you so much, Rusty, for coming on. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer. Check out our episodes on dudesandbeer.com. Check us out on the HC Universal Network. HCUniversalNetwork.com. We have that this podcast there, Dudes and Beer, as well as Yes But Why podcast, Scary Dad, many others to come, Talking Sound podcast. So until next time, everybody, remember, if you can't be good, be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer. Tune in next time for more deep introspection, contemplative thought, and general musings on humanity and life, right here on Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer. Like what you heard? Feel free to tune into the other content by Dudes and Beer on dudesandbeer.com. Our content is also available on the Spreaker Market, as well as SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, and your favorite podcast app. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the Revolution Digital Group family of podcasts. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.